Well, those of you who are already awake after last night's dinner will have noticed that according to the official program, my talk is part of the breakfast. So that's why I thought I'll change it to something more appropriate. Oops. So I'll serve you some bananas and banana splits. I had hoped Bill would be here. So, but since he is not, he will have to, well, I'll serve him the thing afterwards. Okay, so, well, these are my coordinates. This is work in progress in collaboration with my PhD student, Maria Cristina Chiocci, and then three people from Sevilla, Francisco Javier Muñoz-Almaraz, Emilio Frère, and Jorge Galán. The idea of the talk is that I'll try to illustrate on a very simple example, actually an elementary example, a certain reduction technique which works in very general situations, but I'll just show it on a simple example. So it's on subharmonic branching in reversible systems, so let's start with a very simple scalar differential equation, second order, which has the property that if, well, it's Hamiltonian, of course, but I won't use any of the Hamiltonian structure. But it has the property that if y of t is a solution, so is y of minus t. And if you reformulate it as a first order system, then the first order vector field anti-commutes with a reversor, which is just a flip, which takes y into itself and y dot into minus y dot, which is a linear involution. So this can be, well, let's first look at a particular example. If you take this example for f of y, you can easily sketch the phase portrait, and you see you have a family of periodic orbits which are symmetric under this reversor. So they are symmetric with respect to a flip to the horizontal axis. And this is typical for reversible systems. Namely, in general, when you have a system which anti-commutes with a linear involution, so r square is the identity, then if x tilde of t is a solution, so is r of x tilde of minus t. And then something which is important for what I'll do next, these symmetric periodic orbits of such a system are characterized by the fact that these orbits have precisely two intersection points with the fixed space of R. And more in particular, if you find two times T0 and T1 at what time the orbit belongs to fix of R, and it doesn't belong to fix of R in between, then this orbit is periodic with minimal period equal twice the difference between T1 and T0. Very easy. And now, of course, I want to do something more complicated than just that. I make it a four-dimensional system, so two second-order equations. Just to make it easy, the second one is uncoupled, but I couple it to the first one by just putting z at the right-hand side here. And for simplicity, I'll assume that g of 0 is 0, and the derivative of g at 0 is 1. This is again a reversible system. Now the reversor takes y dot z z dot into y minus y dot z minus z dot. Okay. Of course, the plane z equals 0 and z dot equals 0 is still invariant. So I have a starting family of periodic orbits in this system. And what we want to do is to, let me go back. What we want to do is to describe bifurcations from this family. So I'll call this my primary family or primary branch of symmetric periodic orbits, and we want to look at bifurcations from it. And of course, this system is simple enough to analyze it in a quite pedestrian way. So first solve the second equation and then put it as a forcing term at the right hand side of the first equation. Okay, so let's do that. I'll denote by Pa of t the solution. So I'm looking for solutions which are symmetric. Therefore, I take my initial points such that the initial speed is zero. So I start somewhere in fix of r. So let's denote Pa of t the solution of this initial value problem. This solution will be symmetric, and the limiting period when a goes to zero is 2 pi because of my choice of g prime at 0 equal 1. Okay, then I put that solution at the right-hand side of the first equation, and I solve it again with initial speed 0 and some initial value p. And now suppose that there exists a continuous mapping a to some initial point p, depending on a, such that the resulting solution of this problem is periodic. Then if you denote by t tilde of a the period, this must be an integer multiple of the period of the forcing term. And if you take the limit, then you must get in the limit for a going to zero, yeah, you must find a limiting period which is a multiple of the period along my primary family. Okay. So in the end, you get a relation like this. So the periodic orbit along the primary family where you have this bifurcation should be a rational multiple of 2 pi. Okay, now the opposite. Suppose that you have that situation for this period, and then we just look at a solution starting with initial points or initial values p and a, and I know that if it's periodic, then at some other point the speed should be zero, and it should be half of the period of the forcing term, an integer multiple of that. So that's why I take this value here for the time, and I put this equal to zero. And when I can solve this equation in some way for p as a function of a, then the combined solution, this phi together with the psi, will be a periodic solution of my coupled system. Okay, and now of course what do? You just apply the implicit function theorem on that here. And then there are, you have two starting points. So you have this p0, such that the period of this green orbit is exactly this rational multiple of 2 pi. There are two intersection points, p0 and p1, and both of these are solution of that equation when we put a equal to 0. And then when you do the implicit function theorem, that's a little calculation, I won't go through it, but what you find is you take the derivative of the equation in p, and that appears to be different from 0, if the derivative of the period map at p0 is different from 0. The same for the other solution, p1. And that gives you, by the implicit function theorem, two solution branches of the problem. But now, actually, you want to start counting. And you know each symmetric periodic orbit has to intersect the fix of r twice. And so one way of seeing what happens here is just to take half branches for a positive and a negative. You have four half branches, and they must be combined in some way, and that may depend on the particular situation. But anyway, in the end, you have two half branches of symmetric periodic orbits bifurcating along this primary branch of periodic orbits. So a schematic picture is like this. You have your primary branch, and then at this particular orbit, there are two branches bifurcating. The limiting period when you approach the bifurcation point is q times t of p0, so you have a q subharmonic bifurcating. And some further analysis shows you that along one of the branches, typically, you will have linear stability, meaning that the multipliers are on the unit circle, while along the other one, you have instability. Okay. this just this brand this solution family of the first equation of the first color equation combined with z equals zero. Yeah, the P or whatever. Yeah. Now, of course, you can do this in a more general way, and let me explain you that, how you get the same result in a much more general setting using Poincaré map. So instead of the analysis which I made, I take a section which actually corresponds to y dot equals zero, and I put my origin at the point P zero, and so I take as coordinates in this section alpha and z. Z is two-dimensional, alpha is real, and when necessary, I'll identify R2 with the complex plane. And then the important thing is that this section is invariant under the reverser R. Okay? And you can easily see that, and the action of R on this space U is it takes alpha z into alpha z bar, so complex conjugate. And then due to the reversibility, it's very easy to prove that your Poincaré map going from U to U satisfies this relation. So it's what is called a reversible diffeomorphism. So R, P, and R is of course R minus 1, is P minus 1. In our particular situation, which we had before, we have a family of fixed points corresponding to my primary family. So P of alpha and zero is alpha of zero. And if you look at the derivative of the Poincaré map, well, you should get here something, which is diagonal if you write it as a matrix. So it's the identity on the first component, and the second component is multiplied by the non-trivial multipliers along the primary branch, and they have the form i2kp over q plus some deviation from it when you change the point p, which is denoted here by alpha, and my, of course, beta of zero is zero because at the bifurcation point I have a root of unity, and my condition that the derivative of the period map is different from zero is here or implies here that beta dash at zero is different from zero. Okay. No, the dimension is too low. Yeah. Now, if I denote by S0 the derivative at alpha equals zero, then of course S0 to the power q is the identity. This, so S0 generates a ZQ action on this space U. And since I have also this relation for S0, you have, in fact, when you combine S0 with R, you have a DQ action. Yeah? In principle, yes, but the pictures which I show are for Q greater than or equal to 3, and what I'll do further for Q greater than or equal to 5. The lower Q cases you have to do separately. Ah, okay, yeah, that's what you meant by, sorry, yeah, well, I had dinner also yesterday, so, yeah. Okay, and now comes the main point. We are looking for Q subharmonics bifurcating, therefore we need to find fixed points of the Q-th iterate of the Poincaré map. And instead of looking for orbits under the Poincaré map, which are periodic, we just do what we used to do in a long time ago already, when we did Lyapunov-Schmidt for periodic solutions. You take periodic orbits, meaning by infinite sequences of elements in U, which are periodic, and then you just look for those periodic sequences with period Q, which are orbits under P. And when you reformulate that problem, in that space of in that orbit space, it takes the form p hat of v equals sigma v. So v is such a periodic sequence. Sigma is a shift map, and p hat is just the lift of your Poincaré map terms wise to the elements of the sequence. And this is very easy to see, of course. When is the sequence an orbit under P? Well, when each element is P applied to the previous element. So very easy to see that these two things are equivalent. But here, P hat commutes with sigma. And of course, sigma to the power Q is the identity. So again, on this orbit space, we have a ZQ action. And moreover, this P hat retains also its reversibility properties. I haven't written it down. But so you have a problem which has its kind of DQ symmetry. And then comes the main work which you have to do, but I have told you many years ago, many times about all this Lyapunov-Schmidt, so I won't do it again. But it's still useful once in a while. The result is the following. And the nice thing is that you can formulate the result without mentioning any projections or whatever. The result is the following. There is a one-to-one relation between the small q periodic orbits of my Poincaré map and the small q periodic orbits of a new map, a new local diffeomorphism, which I'll call phi, from U to U, which has the following properties. The same ones as my P, the original Poincaré map. So I have a family of fixed points, and the derivative of phi is equal to the, along these fixed points, is equal to the derivative of P. But now, in contrast with the Poincaré map, my mapping phi is exactly ZQ equivariant. And of course, it also retains the reversibility. Moreover, the small q periodic maps of this new mapping phi have also to be ZQ orbits, which gives you immediately an algebraic equation which you can solve. And in the case of the reversible situation which we have here, you can go one step further and prove that the solutions of this equation are also given by the solutions of this, what I'll call then the bifurcation equation, where this bifurcation mapping B is defined like this, and it commutes with S0, that's the ZQ equivariant, and it anti-commutes with R, and therefore you really have a problem where you can use your representation theory for DQ equivariant mappings and things like that. And the consequence of it is that this bifurcation mapping has this precise form, or can be written in this form, and there appear three real-valued functions of U, and they are invariant under this DQ action, so invariant under S0 and invariant under R. Now, very easy to see, if either one of theta 0 or theta 2 at 0 is different from 0, then putting this equal to 0 implies that you need to have, at least for non-trivial solutions, so solutions with z different from 0, you need to have that the imaginary part of z to the power q is 0. And if you look what values of z these are, you get two half branches of zq orbits, so each point here and there, so this is for the case q equal 5, forms a zq orbit, and the orbit is invariant under R. And of course, you see here these two half branches coming out. And now you restrict Z to these values. And for the red solutions and the blue solutions, you have two different equations. But the starting terms are the same. You see here a difference. There's a plus sign and a minus sign here. And it's only in the higher order terms of order q minus 1 or q, that you see any difference between these two equations. And then very easily you calculate theta 1 at alpha 0. It's minus 2 the sinus of beta alpha. You apply the implicit function theorem again, and you solve alpha as a function of rho, and you have your two branches. So now, in order for this to work, you have to have this resonance condition, so a primary period which is a rational multiple of 2 pi, meaning that you need a primary branch along which you find a solution which has multipliers which are Q-truths of unity. And the other condition is this transversality condition. The derivative of the period map must be different from zero. Now, the question is what happens when one of these conditions is not satisfied. And so let's look at the case where the derivative of the period map is different, is equal to zero. Okay? So my transversality condition is not satisfied. Of course, this is a codimension one situation. So I need to add a parameter. You can do this very easily. I take the same system. I just add a parameter to make it easy in the function f. You impose these conditions and then some generically satisfied conditions on second derivatives. You do the same analysis, the same reduction. Everything works as before. And again, you have a blue and a red equation. When you look at the lowest order terms, these two equations are exactly the same. They differ only in the higher order terms. And under generic choices of the function g, all three of these coefficients, a, b, and c, are different from zero. And now, of course, you can already see how the picture will look like. Depending on whether b and c have the same sign or not, you have two different scenarios. And so here is the banana scenario, where for one sign of lambda, you have these two branches bifurcating but connect. So here you have multipliers which are Q-truths of unity here also. You have these two branches coming off, but they connect. And when lambda changes sign, the whole thing disappears. And then the other scenario is the banana split scenario, where for one sign of lambda, you have your two branches coming off. These two come together when lambda is equal to zero, and then for lambda, the other sign, these two disconnect. Okay, so this is a very simple example, but as I said, this is Saturday morning, so I didn't want to do any highbrow mathematics. But let me say a few more things at least. The name of bananas and banana split was first introduced about 10 years ago in a paper of Bruce Peckham, Christos Frouzakis, and Yannis Kevrikidis. This paper in the SAM Journal of Math Analysis. The main difference is that they have full bananas. So the points inside their banana also correspond to periodic orbits because they are looking at general diffeomorphism. The codimensions are different and so on. So here I'm looking only at bifurcation of symmetric periodic orbits, and my solutions correspond to the points on the boundary of the banana. Yes, the banana P. Ah, that's a good. Okay, good, nice. Yeah, I still have to write the paper, so I'll acknowledge you. One particular example where these bananas appear is in something, well, it was not mentioned explicitly in this case by Zebius Dudel yesterday, but when you look at the bifurcations along from L4 and L5, when you change the mass ratio in the restricted circular restricted three body problem, these L4 and L5 undergo a bunch of bifurcations. They go through resonances, 1 over 10, 1 over 9, 1 over 7, etc. And for typical values of this mass ratio, there is a long, so in the plane, I'm not looking in the three-dimensional space, but in the plane you have a short family, so there are two Lyapunov families, one with a short period, one with a long period. And along the short period, it appears that you can see these bananas coming up. And these orbits coming out of these bananas play an important role in the bifurcations at this L4. And a nice paper in which you can find a very nice description of this is this paper of Henrard. Some comments. Maybe I should make, I didn't have time to make a picture, but of course when you change your parameter, you see this banana, for example, but of course there will be different roots of unity, and so in fact you have a whole bunch of bananas like this. Moreover, if you look at, for example, if you assume that this banana corresponds to stable solutions, so multipliers on the unit circle at the bifurcation point, these multipliers are equal to 1, then they go on the unit circle and they have to go back to 1. So there will be a point where they stop and return, meaning that you have the conditions needed to see bananas. So inside banana, there will be further bananas. Well, maybe outside, I don't know. So you get bananas in bananas in bananas in bananas. So that's one possible scenario. I don't know how you have to study that. Of course, you cannot do that with the local analysis where we fix a certain value of Q, because these ones here will correspond to very high period, high values of Q.
Is it transparent that the higher order terms is such that you get the bananas as opposed to your banana split?
This should be, well, this comes from the second order coefficients already. Ah, that's the point. It's work in progress. We still.
Yeah. If you the capacity of that of the two systems sort of skew product structure, you could be also preserving what you are, in fact, in that preserving more energy, like Hamiltonian.
Yeah, yeah.
Two-dimensional contour in
that. Yes, yeah, but of course, yeah.
Different manifestations.
Yeah, maybe, yes, yeah. Of course, it was not the idea to use any of the Hamiltonian structure, but of course the particular example, yeah. Also, I said that there is a second case in which you have a degeneracy. That's when instead of having simple multipliers, you have double or higher multiplicity multipliers, which are cubed root of unity. But of course, I couldn't see that in my example because the dimension is too low. But again, that problem has been studied, and you can do it by the same. You get a five-dimensional bifurcation equation, but because of nilpotency, you can throw away or solve two of the equations, and then you're back to the situation which I had here. And so the main idea was to advertise a little bit this general way of formulating Lyapunov-Schmidt reduction. Namely, you start with the problem looking for periodic solutions, either of vector fields or of mappings, with certain particular structures, symplectic, reversible, equivariant, whatever. It should be possible to formulate these things in such a way that you say, my bifurcating periodic orbits correspond in a one-to-one way to the bifurcating periodic orbits of a reduced problem. The space U in general is the generalized null space of your linearization. So you do Lyapunov-Schmidt not with respect to the full linearization, but just to the semi-simple part, because then you can do easy splittings. Otherwise, when there's a nilpotency, you have to choose your projections and so on, and that makes the formulation of Lyapunov-Schmidt difficult. When you just do the Lyapunov-Schmidt with respect to the semi-simple part, you can reformulate everything in the same terms. You have a starting problem and you have a reduced problem on a smaller space. When you work with vector fields, you have an additional S1 symmetry. When you look for mappings, you have an additional ZQ symmetry. And then you can use your whole apparatus of singularity theory or whatever you like to get the results you want. Okay, well, Bill, I guess you missed the first part of my talk. Should I show it again? how to do this? Okay, well, thank you anyway for...